This is a note from and about Jay Shower, who wrote the play. All opinions expressed are Jay's. About 2 months ago, the planning committee for the Southeastern Gathering met at Jay's house, ate Jay's food, and used his restroom. Out of gratitude, I suppose, the planning committee for the Southeastern Gathering asked Jay to write, cast, rehearse, and perform a skit for the Saturday night festivities. Jay, who is as docile as a clam, agreed. Jay tried very hard to write a funny little bottle skit for the gathering, but what his fevered brain produced, unfortunately, was something quite different. No matter how he tried to write a funny little bottle skit, his brain had other ideas. His brain wanted to write something very different from a funny little bottle skit. Instead of a funny little bottle skit, Jay wrote a very long, sophisticated, one-act, one-person play on the subject of death. After writing this piece, Jay struggled to write another piece, a funny little bottle skit, but failed again. The magic was all gone. So instead of a funny little bottle skit, Jay is going to perform a few selections from this very long, sophisticated, one-act, one-person play on the subject of death. Jay wants to apologize in advance. First, this play is not specifically about beloved Avatar Maker Bob. Jay wishes to stress that he was thinking about Avatar Maker Bob during every moment he was writing the play. Even so, Meher Baba is not mentioned directly, and references to Baba are somewhere between oblique and totally non-existent. Jay apologizes. Second, Jay is going to perform this on his own, largely because he couldn't find anybody else to do it. Thirdly, Jay is going to be reading much of the play from a script because his memory at this point is pretty much shot. Fourth, part of the play talks about surgery, and there are occasional references to bovine excrement. And as the bookstores often say, please do not enter if you are offended by subject matter of a mature nature. Again, Jay apologizes. Finally, Jay says that he realizes that this play is not the best, but says that it's the best he could do under the circumstances. Avatar made a bop. PJ. In order to fully experience this play, you need, if you will, to suspend your disbelief. And if you will, to imagine that at this moment Jay is lying in a very elaborate and very, very detailed but comfortable coffin.
Hi! I'm not dead! I'm getting out of here. I'm sleeping in a coffin. This is a truly peak experience. Many great and famous people have slept in coffins. Sarah Bernhardt. Dracula. Me. Oh, wait a minute, this is not entirely true. I'm sorry, this is not really a coffin. I'm not famous, and I don't really sleep. I'm sitting there, I got my eyes closed, but I can't sleep. I can't sleep in a coffin. I couldn't sleep in a coffin. So part of the rules of this play is that I'm supposed to speak 100% honesty, 100% true all the time. And I don't want to start off on a false note, so I think what I'm going to do is try again. Hi! I'm not dead! want to say that I personally hate plays that have audience participation. Thank you.
Hi!
Hi!
I'm not dead!
You know, remember how I said I wanted to say things that were only 100% true? Well, there's nothing more 100% true than, I'm not dead. That's a completely honest statement. I'm not dead. You want to know how honest it is? You want to know how true it is? Just saying it guarantees that you're not lying. Go ahead, try it. I'm not dead. Try and lie. I'm not dead. You can't do it. Go ahead, come on. I'm not dead. Excuse me. I hate plays with audience participation bullshit. Plays like the Sagnagua. Now, trust me. It gets better later on, but if I were you, I would not participate. If I were you, I would seriously be considering walking out of the theater at this point. However, not you. If you don't feel like participating, I don't mind.
I'm not dead!
Well, listen, enough introduction. It's time for the play. And I would like to stress, frankly, that this play is a little bit on the dense side. Basically, this is the kind of play where you wish you had brought a pillow and you did bring a pillow and a six-pack of beer. This play is like an Ingmar Bergman movie, except worse because it's in English and it's harder to sleep through than if it was in Swedish. Excuse me. It's not really that bad. If it were that bad, I wouldn't be doing it, and I'm doing it, so trust me, it's not that bad. It's really kind of a good play. So what I'm going to say now is, this is your last chance to leave. Okay, you were warned. Seal the exits. We'll begin the play. And by the way, there's one other phrase you can say that is just as true as, I'm not dead. Can you think what it is? It's a very simple phrase. You'll think of it, you'll kick yourself when you think of it.
Tonight, I wish to speak to you about death. Yes, death. Death. But before I speak to you about death, I'd like to speak to you about clams. Or rather, death as it relates to clams, which is a difficult question since clams are barely alive to begin with. And my question is this: how can you tell when a clam is dead? I mean, you can tell when they've been dead a long time by the smell, but I'm talking about a clam on the half shell, little piece of lettuce, little wedge of lemon, little pink thing, and a little pool of clam juice or brine or whatever it is. Smells like a soft sea breeze on a bright day. Is a clam on the half shell dead? Is it? How can you tell? How can you tell if a clam is dead? No matter what, I think you'll agree that even if the clam is dead, it's not very dead. As a matter of fact, this is why many people gag if you ask them to eat clams on the half shell. They only want to eat things that are officially and completely dead. And they want to know, are these clams officially and completely dead? And this is what the clams want to know, too. So how about after you swallow them? Are they dead then? Isn't this a serious question? If they're alive when you swallow them, do they die in your mouth? What if you don't chew and just swallow? Die in your stomach? Your intestines? Isn't this a serious question? If you've got a little bunch of live things floating around inside you, or a little bunch of dead things floating around inside you, or a little bunch of live things that are becoming dead things, isn't this a serious question? I have another question. Wait a minute, this is serious. When does a dead clam come back to life? Now, I'm not talking about reincarnation here. I'm asking a serious question. I'm not talking about metaphysical stuff. I'm talking about how a dead clam, once it's inside your stomach, slowly stops being a dead clam. In your stomach, your insides, your intestines are slowly and methodically taking apart this dead clam piece by piece into little tiny dead clam pieces. And then your stomach and your intestines slowly and methodically take the little dead clam pieces and turn them into little live pieces of you. So when does the dead clam stop being a dead clam and start being a live you?
I know. When it clams up.
It's hard to tell. And here's why. The reason it's hard to tell is because the clam isn't really a clam. In fact, the clam has never really been a clam, never was a clam, never will be a clam. A clam is simply an idea of being a clam. So there. An idea of being a clam. Clams have this idea of being a clam down pat. They've been doing it for thousands of years. They know how to do it. To them, it's not a difficult concept. A clam is just a thing that thinks it's a clam. Because anything that thinks it's a clam is a clam, basically. Because let's face it, if you're not a clam, the last thing you want to think is I'm a clam. A clam is a clam as long as it keeps thinking I'm a clam, and the remains a clam just as long as it can keep thinking it. A clam is just a consciousness of being a clam.
Let me step over here to see if I can put this into a different perspective. What does it mean a clam is really a clam? It is the idea of being a clam. Well, I want you to picture this. A tidal pool on a warm day. Your feet in the warm water, digging in the wet, goopy sand with your toes. Suddenly, you strike two lumps. You reach down into the sand, pick up the two lumps. One's a rock, one's a clam. How can you tell the difference? One's a rock, one's a clam. It's obvious. How can you tell the difference? Why is it obvious? Well, the rock just sits there like a lump. The clam just sits there like the lump. But the clam is thinking, I'm not a lump, I'm a clam! It is clam pride. Now, we have pride, too. We're human beings. We're alive. We have pride, too. We sit there thinking, I'm not a lump. I'm a human being. We tune into this pride. We tune into clam pride. It's like we have pride radio. We're aware of life. Another thing, clam has shape. The rock is a lump. The clam has a shape. Clams really work on their shape. The first thing they do when they start being a clam is working on their shape. They suck up thousands of gallons of seawater, filtering out molecules of calcium to make a nice, clean clam shape. They got pride. You may think at this point that we're getting very far afield from the subject of death, but the fact is, death is a very complex subject, and I don't see how we can even begin to discuss the subject of death if we can't even understand clams. To me, however, the biggest difference between a rock and a clam is this. If you take a 5-pound sledgehammer and bang a rock, you end up with a bunch of little rocks, all more or less the same as the original rock. If, on the other hand, you take a 5-pound sledgehammer and bang a clam, you end up with a mess. A mess that, no matter, and I like clams a lot, I wouldn't eat if you paid me, even with cocktail sauce. You bang a clam with a hammer, you end up with clam puree. And it's very, very difficult for the clam to remember, when it's puree, that it's a clam. Instead of thinking, I'm a clam, it's thinking, I used to be a clam. Thinking you're a clam is tough if you're puree. Thinking you're anything is tough if you're puree. So the point of this is that a clam is a clam as long as you keep thinking it's a clam, instead of, I used to be a clam, or stops thinking anything at all. I used to be a student of Zen meditation. And to me, the point of Zen meditation is to stop thinking you're anything. The whole meditation process is basically a means of pureeing your brain. Now, Zen students could probably achieve this much more quickly if they used a sledgehammer. But that wouldn't be as boring. And since the boredom is probably the most exciting thing about Zen meditation, I decided to stop being a student of Zen meditation. Now, a while ago I told you that this was a serious play, this was a good play, or I wouldn't be doing it, and at this point you're probably wondering why I said that. And I think of it this way. I think what the play is trying to say, in its cute little way, is that people and clams are like the same thing. I mean, that's pretty obvious, isn't it? We're like the same thing, but clams are so simple. They're so stupid. It's easy to understand clams. And we're so complex. So smart. Our brains are so big and fat. But the way I see it, our big, fat brains are just like pink, wet clams in a clamshell. And if you've ever seen a brain, that's how it looks. Pink, wet, hard gray shell. In fact, I have seen one. This is not pretty. This is fact. This is not pretty. I was driving down El Camino Real, which is the main drag of Palo Alto, California, when I saw a guy get hit head-on by a car, guy on a motorcycle. Guy flips through the air, does this long, slow arc, does a flip, somersault, lands head-first on the asphalt. No helmet. You can see he was dead. You didn't need to be an expert to see he was dead. This guy was not going home for dinner. About 10 seconds ago, he'd been driving along. I'm a person, not a lump! Suddenly, the asphalt changes his mind for him. The asphalt's sitting there saying, you're a lump, not a person. Now, the difficult thing for me here is that he wasn't dead. They scraped him up off the asphalt. And they took him to Stanford University Hospital. Now, it so happens at this point in my life, I had a friend working at Stanford University Hospital named Amy Brown, nurse. It's like a bad teenage girl's novel, isn't it? Amy Brown, nurse. She's real. Later, married one of the heart surgeons, had 4 kids, became a Mormon. Amy Brown was in charge of donor maintenance. They would bring people into her. Oh, by the way, most heart donors were motorcycle riders. They would bring people into her, and she would keep their hearts alive. They brought in this motorcycle guy. She kept the heart alive for 3 days. The hearts are inside the people's bodies. The people are dead. She kept the motorcycle guy fed and watered, kept fresh air going in and out of his lungs, kept his heart beating for 3 days while a bunch of experts got together to declare this guy legally dead. Stanford kept a staff of experts on hand who would look at guys like this and declare them legally dead. These experts would basically look at these motorcycle guys and say, this is a lump, not a person, just like the asphalt said. We definitely believe the asphalt. Asphalt had tremendous credibility with these experts. And Amy would keep the heart beating until these experts all got together and signed a lot of papers that said, we believe the asphalt. And at that point, the following thing happened, and everything I say is now true, and you know it is. They would wheel this guy into a room. They took an electric handheld circular saw, cut open his chest, open up the ribs, cut out his heart with a knife, and threw the rest away. It's a lump, not a person. They didn't need it anymore. And then they wheeled in some sick guy. Took an electric handheld circular saw, cut open his chest, opened up his ribs, cut out the sick guy's heart with a knife. threw that away. It was a lump. They didn't need it anymore. Then they take the motorcycle guy's heart, put it in the sick guy's chest, zap it full of electricity till it bounces around and begins to beat again. Oh, I'm sorry, I forgot. They sew it up with a needle and thread. Zap it with electricity till it begins to beat. Squeeze the guy's chest back down and staple it in place with a staple gun. Absolutely true. Western medicine. Western medicine says we can do anything. Western medicine says you are definitely a lump. Western medicine says we believe in asphalt. And what happened was this. The sick guy, the guy who had now had the heart of an officially dead motorcyclist, the sick guy who was on the edge of death, or everybody involved in this process would have been arrested for doing this craziness, the sick guy wakes up and feels great. It's a miracle. It's a miracle. It's Western medicine. Amy Brown would go home and throw up. So I guess the point is, I believe that if you understand about claims, you understand about death. But there's some kind of death I don't understand about. I don't understand about slow deaths. I don't understand about guys with AIDS. Or guys with cancer. When do they die? When I look at a guy who's dying and I think, oh, you're kind of a lump. Not a person. What does that do to his consciousness? What about the heart they threw away? What was that, a lump? I don't know. I don't know. This is complex. So that's the end of this part of the play, which for you is the whole play. And all I have to say is, blessed be God forever. And I'm not dead.